Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word as we continue our exposition of the book of Genesis. We've come to Genesis chapter 26, where history repeats itself. Just as happened earlier in Abraham's early wanderings in the Promised Land, a famine befell the land in the time of Isaac. Now there was a famine in the land besides the previous famine that had occurred in the days of Abraham, we read. So Isaac went to Gerar, to Abimelech, the king of the Philistines. And the Lord appeared to him and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Stay in the land of which I shall tell you. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath which I swore to your father Abraham. And I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven, and I will give your descendants all these lands. And by your descendants all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because God is faithful. Abraham obeyed me, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." So Isaac lived in Gerar. Periodic drought conditions were a precipitating factor. They were recurrent in that land. Unlike Abraham's decision to wait out the famine in Egypt, the Lord appears to Isaac and instructs him to stay put, not to take refuge from the famine in Egypt. To that directive, the Lord reiterates his promises to Isaac's father and to Jacob, his son. To Isaac, the Lord promises, "I will be with you, one, and I will bless you, two. To you and your descendants I will give all these lands. I will confirm the oath that I swore to your father Abraham. I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky. I will give them all these lands. And through your offspring all the nations of the earth will be blessed." That promise was first made to Abraham. It continues to reverberate through the patriarchs. It comes now to Isaac and will go on to Jacob. This promise was unconditional. Why? Because Abraham obeyed me, and Abraham did everything I required of him, keeping my commands as a matter of faith. Abraham kept my decrees and my instructions. So we see that the security of this promise was Abraham's work, not Isaac's, and that is analogous to the promises of our salvation. That our salvation is contingent and based upon, secured by Christ's work, not our own works. So, obediently, Isaac stayed in Gerar. There he stayed with Abimelech. That's either a throne name or a dynastic name. It's not a personal name. It literally means, "My father is king." Abimelech apparently was a proto-Philistine. By that I mean, that people, the Philistines, did not arrive on the Mediterranean coast and establish their five city-states that we know so well until the 12th century B.C. But it is thought that an early contingent settled there centuries earlier in the migrations and the movements of the so-called Mediterranean Sea peoples. Apparently, the site of their habitation, these proto-Philistines, first Philistines, was this place named Gerar. There Isaac settled in for a while. He faced the same peril Abraham experienced when Abraham had migrated temporarily to Egypt in a time of famine. You remember Abraham tried to protect himself in exactly the same way. In the end, he got exactly the same result. Isaac, like his father Abraham, also possessed a beautiful wife. He naturally feared, as an outsider, that some of the local nobles might kidnap Rebekah, and in those days when they didn't take a lot of prisoners, they would dispose of Isaac, her husband. So to shield himself, Isaac risked her honor by telling everybody that Rebekah was his sister. Eventually, the ruse was exposed. It so happened that Abimelech looked out his palace window one nice day, and there he espied Isaac caressing his wife like a lover rather than a sister. That shook up the king, so he immediately arranged a conference with Isaac. He demanded an explanation, chastised him verbally for putting men at risk of misappropriating Isaac's wife. That would bring guilt and divine punishment down on them. Even if they didn't know the true and the living God, these were days when people everywhere believed in the supernatural, and they believed in accountability when people violated natural law. So, he was very disturbed about the possible consequences of Isaac's deception. There's none too happy about it, and its potential for a very bad ending. So, having discovered Isaac's deception, Abimelech issues what today we might call a cease and desist order throughout his kingdom where Rebekah was concerned. No messing around with her. Notice was given to any who might have any ideas of taking her as a wife. This, again, folks, is God's protection, despite Isaac's foolish effort at self-protection. Now, the question begs to be asked, why would Isaac make the same dumb mistake his father made? I suspect this is a lesson in the fact that if we don't ask God to help us in our situations, history tends to repeat itself all the way around. However, get this. The larger emphasis here is not on Isaac's unwise ploy to save his own life, but the larger lesson, as in the case of Abraham, is on God's protection of and his blessing upon his servant in alien circumstances where one would naturally expect first Abraham and then Isaac to suffer from disadvantage, to emerge poorer rather than richer. And there's a lesson for us all. In this tense situation, by the grace of God, Isaac will emerge abundantly prosperous. Apparently alongside his flocks and herds, and in those days, that was cash. Isaac did some farming, and from his crops in that land, that same year, he had reaped, through divine blessing, a whopping hundredfold. That was not because he was such a talented farmer, but it was because the Lord blessed him. We read in verse 13, "And the man," meaning Isaac, "became rich, and continued to grow richer, until he became very wealthy, for he had possessions of flocks and herds, and a great household, so that the Philistines envied him." That's a problem. It explains what happens next. "Now all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father, the Philistines stopped up by filling them with earth. Then Abimelech said to Isaac, 'We'd like you to go away from us. You're too powerful for us.' But Isaac departed from there and camped in the valley of Gerar and settled there." All this blessing of God brings its burdens. For to repeat the verse, he had so many flocks and herds and servants that the Philistines, their host, envied him, the guest in their environs. Listen, whenever and wherever people prosper, envy sooner or later follows. It always has been the case. It still is the case and always will be the case. With envy comes strife. In fact, it had dogged Abraham before him. For we read in verse 15 that all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the time of his father Abraham. This implies that Abraham was no longer alive at this time. The Philistines stopped up. These actions were a big red flag for Isaac. It was his host's way of signaling their growing envy of these aliens in their midst. By stopping their wells, so essential to their livelihood and that of their flocks and herds, like cutting off your lifeblood, they were putting out a huge unwelcome sign. It was like building a wall, for they felt all of Isaac's gains were to their loss. To his credit, Abimelech is quite upfront about what his people felt was a threatening situation. He wanted Isaac to move away from us. You have become too powerful for us. Again, I emphasize, how many times have I said this? In all of these narratives, remember, God is the main actor. Human beings are just players on the stage of God's grand drama of human redemption. This is just part of the developing story. By sovereign election, God works in and through and on behalf of chosen individuals. Isaac, Rebekah, he happens to be one. What will become of a chosen nation to glorify himself throughout the whole universe? That's what God's up to, creating this chosen nation. It's a slowly unfolding drama. It's God at work. It's his sovereignty at work. So here what we are seeing is God working out his plan. We're seeing God fulfilling his promises to his elect. His elect are sometimes doing dumb things. That included Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They did not prosper, folks, nor do we, because they were so good. They did not prosper, nor do we, because they're so great. But in time, God makes his chosen both good and great. But they prosper, and they are protected, as Isaac was here, and they become powerful, if it is God's will for them to become powerful, as it was in this case, just because that happens to be part of God's promise and part of God's purpose. So what are we to learn? That the same God has chosen us as his own, and the same God has given us many great promises, and the same God will be as faithful in providing for and protecting us at the end of the day, as in their cases. No, our role in his redemptive plan is not so signal, not so significant, not so outsized, as in their cases. But we also learn that his servants were not perfect, and we're going to see more of that in the narratives that follow. That's an understatement. His servants became, by his grace, people of integrity, and he sustained them, and he made them successful in any particular way he intended for them to succeed, and so he will with us. We must not forget that. In verse 17, and Isaac departed from there and camped in the valley of Gerar, and he settled there. Nobody ought, if they can help it, to stick around where they are unwelcome, especially if that happens to be someone else's turf or home. So Isaac prudently puts a little distance between them and the city and moves out a ways into the valley of Gerar. That's all in the hope of keeping the peace. That was good. As God's people, we ought always to live at peace with those who are around us, so far as they will allow us. Sometimes people won't allow us. But Isaac was certainly willing to try and go the extra mile, and we see that. Isaac reopened the wells in verse 18 that had been dug in the time of his father Abraham, which the Philistines had stopped up after Abraham died. Well, Isaac gave them the same names that his father had given them. The Philistines, these proto-Philistines that we talked about, had hoped to discourage encroachment upon their territory after the passing of the powerful Abraham. They were trying to render the surrounding land infertile and unsupportive of flocks and herds. So when Abraham passed off the scenes, the Philistines seized the moment. Before Isaac, his son and his heir could gain a lot of traction. They hastened to fill the wells that formerly belonged to Abraham and discourage any continued occupation for their pastoral purposes. However, when the unpleasantness over Rebekah forced the displacement of Isaac from the city-state of Gerar, Isaac had fallen back on the grazing lands formerly used by his father. Survival on the outskirts required him to reclaim the rights to that land. He did that by, wasn't a hostile action, it was just a survival action. He did that by reopening the wells his father's servants had dug there, in verse 15. And in an action that asserted his claim to those wells, we saw back there that he gave them the same names that his father had given them. Well, in verse 19, this move would not go unchallenged by the jealous Philistines. Water rights could be a very contentious resource in an arid land, which was highly dependent upon water supply for agriculture and for flocks and herds. Well, in verse 20, when the servants of Isaac dug in the valley and found an artesian well, that is, one with living or flowing water, the locals hastily disputed their claim. Big quarrel broke out over it. Would there now be a fight or would there be flight? Would Isaac stand up and defend his rights or would he turn the other cheek? We read that Isaac named the well Esek, which means dispute, and having named it such, he just moved on. It wasn't fight, it was flight. Now that must have been a very hard thing to do. Given the labor of his servants, given the critical need of water, and their own discovery of the water source, yeah, that's hard to walk away from. But we remember this, folks, if we're looking for equity in this world, it's a vain trip. Life is not fair. Never has been, is not, and never will be, until Christ returns. So Isaac, in the strength of God's previous promises of blessing and protection, we've got to understand that that's in the back of his mind. Isaac understands that somebody has his back. So in the strength of God's promises of blessing and protection, all of which he had recently experienced, in strength, not in weakness, Isaac decides that he can afford, with God's support, just to turn the other cheek and move on. He was confident, that's the atmosphere of the text, that God will provide somehow, some way, somewhere else. So in verse 21, Isaac and his servants back off. They dig a well in another place. But again, the Philistine herdsmen come calling again in a hostile manner. Same as before, Isaac named that well too. This one he calls Sitnah, which means opposition. So in verse 22, he finally moves on to another place. We're amazed at this man's cheek turning. They dig another well, and this time he seems far enough removed from the herdsmen of Gerar that no one contests his water rights. Thankfully, he gives it the manorial name of Rehoboth, which means room. That name symbolically expresses relief, that the Lord has given us room and we will flourish in the land. In other words, Rehoboth spells monument. It means room, but it was a monument to Isaac. All this giving way to hostile parties reminds me, and should remind you, of what Jesus taught his disciples in the Sermon on the Mount. In the matter of acceding to the demands of Roman soldiers when they conscripted the Jewish people for duty or demanded from them their property, Jesus counseled his disciples to accommodate them amply and not to resist them, to turn the other cheek and not fight back. Well, verse 23, from there at some point in the patriarch's migratory habit, Isaac moves back to Beersheba where Abraham had been. We read that that night the Lord appeared to him and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. I will bless you, and I will increase the number of your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham. Now, please listen to me. When the Lord comes to meet us, in whatever form it takes. It is most often, I think, in the time of crisis when fear and anxiety weigh upon us. With all God's blessing, Isaac has become a notable figure in the southwestern part of the land of Canaan. He finds himself an object of envy, and that's kind of a perilous place to be. He finds himself one of sufficient weight to create fear in his neighbors. And we all know this, don't we? People who are fearful can be dangerous. Isaac was not unaware of that psychology, and that in turn would generate some fear on his own part. Folks, the Lord always knows when his servants can most benefit by reassurance. He knows at what time, and he knows in what way. His first counsel to Isaac was to bury his fear. Well, how can one do that? Just take God by faith. The Lord promises Isaac, and folks, we have this same promise, Hebrews chapter 13, same one given to Joshua, I am with you. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. I am with you. It's just like Jesus told his disciples when they felt their boat was about to be swamped and they thought he was a ghost when he was walking to them, have no fear, it is I. What we need to know is that God is with us and he has promised to be. That's all we need to know. He will never leave us. He will never forsake us. He will faithfully keep his promises. Sometimes when all kinds of stuff and all kinds of storms are raging around us, it's comforting and it's settling just to take a deep breath, not to panic, to take a step back and just remind ourselves it is the Lord in all of this. It may seem fearful, like the storm on the sea. It may seem fearful, like jealous coworkers at work, or jealous neighbors, or whatever. But to remember that the Lord is in it, and he has his purposes, and he will keep his promises. And the main promise is, I am with you. And he has promised that in the end, always remember that phrase, in the end, at the end of the day, he will bless us. Well, that settled Isaac. Verse 25, he immediately responded like his father Abraham on such occasions. That was a very good sign. The legacy of faith was in his son. He built an altar there, and he called upon the name of the Lord. He pitched his tent, and there his servants dug a well. Yes, when faith is at its best, when faith faces down fear, it always is productive of worship. We see that in the case of Abraham. We see that here in the case of Isaac. Worship, bowing the knee to the Lord God and not bowing to all of the fears that swirl about us and want to wreck our life's boats. When a man's ways are pleasing to the Lord, he so often causes his enemies, I mean God does, in one fashion or another, to be at peace with him. So on this occasion, all of a sudden Abimelech and his top personal and military commander respectively paid Isaac a visit. The dignity of the delegation tells us a lot about the stature that God had given this patriarch, an alien in the eyes of his Philistine neighbors. We see him treated now in verse 26 as a peer as they come calling. They were feeling insecure in the face of Isaac's amassed wealth and resources. Well, our time has expired, folks. We'll pick it up from there in the next study. God bless you, and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.